Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. I have a unique format for this week's program. Joining me for the entire program will be Mr. Ian Gordon of the Longwave Group. So often we have to cut our interviews with guest experts shorter than we would like them to be. They have so much information to offer. And on today's program, I'll be chatting with Mr. Gordon, and the best way I can describe my conversation with him is to probably bring you back to something your history teacher told you at one point or another. Or maybe it was your history professor in college. He or she probably told you that those who don't study history are doomed or condemned to repeat it. That's a mouthful, and I think my conversation today with Mr. Gordon will certainly verify and validate that what your history teacher or history professor told you is right. I will be getting to my conversation with him momentarily, and most importantly, I'll be getting from him his view as to the strategies you should be implementing in your own individual financial situation. If you'd like another tool that might help you identify some strategies or tactics that make sense for you, you could visit the website yourportfoliowatch.com. That's Y-O-U-R, yourportfoliowatch.com. And simply sign up for my free weekly newsletter titled Portfolio Watch. It's delivered to your inbox every Monday at 5 p.m., so shortly after the market closes, you'll get this weekly update. To subscribe again, visit the website, yourportfoliowatch.com. That's Y-O-U-R, yourportfoliowatch.com. I'm extremely pleased to have back on the Everything Financial radio program today. One of my old friends, at least I've interviewed him enough, it is like talking to an old friend. His name is Ian Gordon. He is president and founder of the Longwave Group. His website is longwavegroup.com, and the website, again, longwavegroup.com. There's a wealth of knowledge there, and I'd encourage you to check it out. And Ian, welcome back to the program.
Well, I'm very happy to be back.
Ian, we're going to have a little different format on today's program because you are such a brilliant economic historian. I'd like to take the first part of our interview and just talk about some of your work historically, which really is based on predictable, repeatable cycles, in your view. And then I'd like to talk about where we are in those cycles and tie it into some current events. So maybe we should just start, for our listeners that maybe have not heard you on the program before, talk about your work at the Longwave Group.
Well, the Longwave Group, you know, I first started writing a publication called The Longwave Analyst in 1998. And my work was based on Nikolai Kondratiev's work, which he published in 1926, which was effectively a long economic cycle. And this cycle lasts anywhere between 50, 70 years. And, you know, Nikolai Kondratiev went back to the dawn of the Industrial Revolution in 1789 and sort of worked through these cycles. So, and he was able to, in 26, you know, when he published, he was able to forecast that we were going into what I now call, and many other people, it's not just me, but the winter of the economic cycle, which was the depression phase of the cycle. And so what's happened is that I've divided the cycle into the four seasons. He didn't use the four seasons, but I've done that because I think they're very apropos, like spring being the birth or rebirth of the economy, summer being time when the economy reaches its fruition, call autumn the feel-good period, you know, it's a time when stocks, bonds, and real estate always have their biggest gains, and then winter, which is the payback season when debt is wrung out of the economy so that it can start refreshed again in the spring. So we're now in the fourth long wave or Kondratiev cycle, and effectively we're in the winter of the cycle. We're in what happened after 1929 or 1873 or 1837. We're in the effectively in the depression stage of the cycle. But this time, what's happened in this cycle, the Federal Reserve, the entire world is on a paper currency system, and so it's been the Federal Reserve has been able to effectively bring, you know, sort of hold back the ravages of the winter of the depression phase of the cycle by printing like massive amounts of money. That wasn't available to the Federal Reserve after 1929 because we were on a gold standard or a gold exchange standard system, so the dollar was backed by gold, and anybody at that time could effectively go to the bank with a $20 bill and get just less than a one-ounce gold coin, either St. Gordon's or a Liberty one-ounce gold coin, or a $10 for just a half-ounce gold coin. And after 29, in fact, that's what people started to do because the banking system in the United States, because of the huge credit bubble that had evolved during the First World War and thereafter, the banking system had lent out so much money, not just in the United States, but overseas and so on. And that banking system started to collapse because the debt couldn't be repaid. And between 1929 and 33, you had 10,000 U.S. banks failed. So people were rushing to own gold because they were so frightened of what was occurring. And effectively, when Roosevelt became president in 1933, and in those days the president assumed office in March, the first thing he did was confiscate all the gold that Americans had accumulated. And a lot of American gold had also been taken overseas by different people and countries and so on. So he took the gold at $20.67 away, confiscated it, made it mandatory for people to give up their gold, and so effectively the U.S. Followed every other country out of the gold exchange standard system onto a paper money system. So we've effectively been on that paper money system since 1933. Yes, you can say that up after Bretton Woods, the U.S. went back to a partial gold standard system where the dollar was pegged to gold at $35 an ounce, but Americans themselves couldn't even own gold after Bretton Woods until 1973. So Bretton Woods was 1944. The only countries could take their dollars and take American gold out of the country. So, for instance, if Germany sold Mercedes in the United States, they got paid in dollars, the dollars came back to Germany, and the German Central Bank then took the dollars into their reserves and effectively paid the Mercedes manufacturer in Deutschmarks. And so what happened is the American government started to print more and more money, during the Vietnam War and so on. More and more countries started to exchange their dollars for American gold. And America had a lot of gold because what had happened when, the rate was $20.67 an ounce, Roosevelt, after he'd confiscated the gold, raised that, in fact, devalued the dollar against gold by 70% by raising, in 1934, the value to $35. So a lot of gold that had left the United States during the beginnings of the Depression came back into the United States for $35 of gold. So the U.S. had a lot of gold, but Germany, France, Italy, and so on started to take gold out. And eventually it became apparent that, you know, the U.S. was effectively doesn't have the gold to support the dollar. And so they tried to sort of support it at $35 an ounce, but more and more people and countries were trying to buy gold at $35 an ounce because they could see the U.S. inflation that was occurring. So they tried to curb the price at 35 by instituting a thing called the London Gold Pool, which if the gold went above $35, there were eight countries members of this pool, but the U.S. was 50% of the pool. They would sell gold to keep it at $35 an ounce. That failed in, I think, 1968. And so more and more gold was leaving the U.S., and in 1973, President Nixon basically slammed the gold window, stopped repudiating American gold for dollars, and we went on a paper money system. The U.S. dollar was only backed by paper.
Ian, I'm going to have to stop you right there. We'll pick this up in the next segment again. We're just about out of time.
All right.
In case you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Mr. Ian Gordon. His website is longwavegroup.com. I would encourage you to check it out. There's a wealth of information there. And I'll continue my conversation with Ian when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. You are listening to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I hope you're getting a lot out of the conversation I'm having today with Mr. Ian Gordon. I work really hard to bring you value every week, so I certainly hope you're appreciating the information that Mr. Gordon is sharing with you. We'll get right back to my conversation with him now. I'm chatting today with Mr. Ian Gordon of the Long Wave Group. His website is longwavegroup.com. I would encourage you to check it out. Ian is one of the premier economic historians that I have ever talked to, and it's a pleasure to have him back on the program again. And Ian, on this special episode of Everything Financial Radio, we're talking to you today about really the history of these economic cycles, and we'll finish that off in this segment, and we'll tie it into, in the next couple segments, what that means for people today and what it means for their money and what they should do. So in the last segment, we were talking about the fact that really as a result of a lot of money printing, there wasn't enough gold to back up the paper currency that had been printed in the 60s. And then in the early 1970s, President Nixon closed the gold window for foreign investors. And at that point, the U.S. dollar officially became what we call a fiat currency. So let's pick it up from there.
Okay, but, you know, now the U.S. had a problem. You know, once they had basically taken the dollar off gold, they had a problem because they wanted to maintain the dollar as the reserve currency. So what they did was they effectively got Saudi Arabia to agree that all Saudi oil would be paid for in dollars. Whoever was buying Saudi oil would have to pay in dollars. And the U.S. offered Saudi military protection for that agreement. And then eventually all the Arab oil exporting nations followed Saudi Arabia into this agreement, and thus was born the petrodollar. Now, the petrodollar was effectively, it basically was robbing from the rest of the world, because all the rest of the world had to earn their dollars so that they could buy oil. And what they would do is they would take the dollars that they earned and put it into their reserves and actually invest in U.S. treasuries. So they were effectively helping the U.S. Debt markets by investing in these U.S. treasuries, and as a result, also helping the U.S. military, the funding of the U.S. military. So anyway, what we're seeing now really is the petrodollar is dying. The status of the petrodollar is dying because so many countries are making agreements to move away from using dollars as a means, as a mechanism for paying for oil or for any other thing, any other commodity that is sort of works between the two countries. For instance, Russia and China, all the Russian oil that's exported to China is paid for in yuan. India and Iran, all the oil that Iran exports to India is paid for in rupees, and so on. So we've got the world effectively moving away from the dollar, and the days of the dollar's predominance and hegemony are rapidly coming to an end. And because of that, we're going to have a dramatic reversal, really, for the United States, because the ability just to create dollars to buy everything is going to come to an end, because more and more people will not accept dollars in terms of their trade between themselves, but countries between countries. So these are very, very difficult times that we're now entering. And so, as I said in the first segment, the winter, the depression stage of the cycle has been forestalled by money printing. And after 2008, for instance, world debt has been increased by $47 trillion. All this is coming to an end. The whole paper money system, which has been foisted, every country has a paper money system, is rapidly coming to an end here. And the ramifications of this are really, really actually quite terrifying, because the whole system is going to collapse. And if you think about paper money, it is simply debt money. And so if the paper money system collapses, or the dollar collapses, it means that the ability for the economy to function is going to be taken, taken away, because everything in the economy is on credit. I mean, someone delivers groceries to the grocery stores, they've got a 30-day credit, before they're paid off, and this kind of thing. So the economy right now is, and the winter, the economic winter is right there with us, and the ability of the central banks to forestall this is rapidly coming to an end. So this is we're entering a period in history that we've never been in before, where the whole world has been subject to paper money. And this is going to be really quite devastating, and particularly in countries like the United States that, have used petrodollars to effectively buy anything, use dollars which they can print to buy anything they want, and whereas the rest of the world has been, forced to earn these dollars by selling to the United States. So it's going to be a really rough period in our lives now.
Well, we're going to talk about some details with Ian, and we're going to talk about what's been happening around the world here in the last month to really accelerate this trend. Ian's website is longwavegroup.com. I'd encourage you to check it out. And Ian, we'll talk more in the next segment.
Give me your money.
Now that we've taken a look into some of the history of economic cycles, we'll start to talk with Mr. Gordon about what might lie ahead and, most importantly, strategies that you might consider. I'm chatting today with Mr. Ian Gordon of the Long Wave Group. I would encourage you to check the website out at longwavegroup.com. And, Ian, you've graciously agreed to stay with us today for all four segments of the program, and it's been very helpful to get the perspective as to how these cycles keep repeating themselves. And I often explain this to people that, human behavior is predictable, but it seems the collective behavior of groups of politicians is even more predictable. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, but, I think what's happening now is that the politicians are almost in panic mode. And what we're seeing is a major shift in economic and financial power. It's it's going away from the United States, and it's definitely moving towards China. So China, you know, is evolving now, as one would expect, as the leading economic power, and that effectively means that the yuan itself will take over from the dollar as the reserve currency. Now, I'm not sure if it'll be strictly a yuan or whether it'll be Silk Road monetary system that will evolve from all of this, but certainly the days of the dollar hegemony are rapidly coming to an end, and that means things are going to be really very difficult in the United States.
Well, Ian, let's talk about a couple of things that have happened in the last really month. First we had Deutsche Bank, you know, and we've chatted in the past that how can all this paper currency be printed and we see bubbles in real estate and stocks and we don't see it in gold? And many of us have suspected the gold market has been manipulated. And certainly Deutsche Bank now came forward and said, yeah, we've been doing it, but we're not the only ones. Let us help. Can you explain to the listeners what happened?
Well, you know, effectively, you know, as the U.S., the dollar has always made war on gold because to maintain the vision of its preeminence as a currency. So we talked about the London gold pool in an earlier segment, where for 6 years they tried to hold back the price of gold from rising above $35 an ounce, but the U.S. has always tried to convince people that the dollar is as good as gold, which obviously it isn't because of the amount of dollars that have been printed ever since Nixon went off gold in 1973. Any time that gold started to rear its head, particularly after 2011, you've seen, using the paper gold market like the COMEX, you've seen usually on a Sunday night about 9 in the evening, New York time, you've seen like sometimes as much as 30 tons of gold unleashed all at the same time just to try and drive down the price of gold and to push out, you know, the gold bulls. I think those days are coming to an end. The ability to control the price of gold on the COMEX are coming to an end. And the reason I believe that is because China has just introduced a yuan-backed gold trading system in Shanghai. But that is trading in real gold. You're not trading paper. You're not buying and selling a gold price in paper. You are trading. If you want to sell gold, you sell it on the Shanghai Exchange in yuan, and someone buys it on the Shanghai Gold Exchange in yuan. So China's ability to start, you know, is coming to the fore in basically setting the price of gold, because it's going to be set against the real metal, not against, you know, a paper pricing system. So, and the Chinese, the Russians, Kazakhstan, and so on, that all the Silk Road, they're accumulating massive amounts of gold. It's been estimated that China started accumulating gold, and a very good economist, Alistair MacLeod, has estimated, based on what was China was saying, that they started to accumulate gold in 1987. And Alistair MacLeod reckons that the Chinese government now has about 20,000 tons of gold. And also, China has encouraged her citizens. After about 2001, China encouraged her citizens to buy gold. Well, I think, you know, and I think Alistair MacLeod agrees with this, that was done because China had already felt sufficient. She had sufficient amount of gold, and she could now have her citizens come in competing for this gold. So the massive amounts of gold that have been going into China, and also China is the largest gold-producing country, and none of that gold is leaving. So what you're seeing is we're slowly moving, China is slowly moving to a gold-backed monetary system, and that probably will be in place. She's already put in place everything that parallels the Bretton Woods system, you know. So we've got a parallel to the IMF, we've got a parallel to the Bank for International Settlements, so we've got SWIFT parallels and everything. So everything is being put in place so that when the dollar finally collapses, and I think that those days are fairly close, a new monetary system will evolve with all these things in place, and it will be, you know, probably, almost certainly, some sort of gold backing for this new system.
So, Ian, let's talk about, in the 3 minutes or so we have left in this segment, let's talk about China's currency now being tied to gold. We have now the first new gold-backed currency in the world. That, coupled with the fact that dollars are no longer universally used in trade and to purchase oil, that means a lot of these dollars come back to the United States. Isn't the only outcome in that situation going to be just massive inflation or even a hyperinflation?
Well, I think so, because as the value, you know, already the Federal Reserve has bought, you know, the dollars are coming back. China's sending dollars back. Russia's sending dollars back. Already dollars are coming back, and the Federal Reserve has bought something like $4 trillion of these dollars that are coming back by simply printing money. So, when the value of the dollar, particularly against the yuan and these Silk Road, I suspect what we're going to see is a Silk Road currency.
Explain what that is to the listeners.
China is developing this Silk Road, putting massive amounts of money into it. But it will be some sort of gold backing to that currency. But when that happens, everything priced in dollars is going to be sky high. So things like oil, you know, the oil price in dollars is going to be massively higher than it is right now. Everything that the U.S. imports will be
I
don't know if it'll be hyperinflation, but it will be mass inflation. And interest rates, obviously, in that environment, the Federal Reserve will not be able to control the interest rates because no one's going to lend the United States money, and the Federal Reserve doesn't have the capacity to simply print all these dollars. Well, if it continues to print, the dollar effectively will be worthless. And, you know, we can go back to Voltaire saying that eventually all paper money returns to its real value, zero. And that's what's going to happen to these paper currencies. But things like the ruble and the yuan and so on are going to have some sort of gold backing, so they won't go to zero. So things are going to be really actually quite frightening here in the United States. I'm in Canada, but, you know, you're very close to us, just below the border here. So it's going to be a time of massive upheaval.
We're going to leave it there for this segment. Fortunately, we do have one more segment. If you'd like to visit Ian's website, longwavegroup.com is the website. I'll continue my conversation with Mr. Ian Gordon when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Dennis Tubergen here again, hoping you're getting a lot out of my conversation with Ian Gordon on the Everything Financial Radio podcast today. Let's get right back to that conversation. I have the pleasure of chatting today with Mr. Ian Gordon. He is the founder of the Longwave Group. His website is longwavegroup.com. And Ian, you used the term in the last segment, Silk Road currency. Explain to the listeners what that means. Can you define that?
What's happening is China, along with many other countries, has been developing what she calls the Silk Road, and it's all these countries that it was the old Silk Road, it was Marco Polo's route into China and so on, and all these countries had an interconnectedness in terms of trade and so on, and she's doing the same thing right now, and you know, Russia is a part of this, and the Stan countries, and and so on. And so what you're, China's sort of spearheading is a massive sort of new economic bloc, and that's what the Silk Road is going to be. It's going to be a massive economic bloc that's going to compete with the European bloc and the American bloc. But and it's going to be a big trading bloc, and all these countries are effectively coming together. And I can see them sort of developing a common currency, much like the euro, but has been developed. But it won't be a currency like the euro, which is all paper. It will, be gold-backed. China's, for instance, developing gold mines in these countries and helping these countries develop gold mines. I think put $16 billion into sort of developing these gold mines in these Silk Road countries. But eventually that Silk Road is going to move into Europe itself. And you can start to see that certain, the European countries, for instance, United Kingdom is moving in some ways closer to sort of China and, away from Europe. You've got a vote next month in the United Kingdom as to whether to stay in the EU or not. And, I think at this time, the consensus is that, the vote will go to leave the EU. And if that happens, you're going to see that countries are slowly going to evolve towards China, because China is now effectively leading the world. And this is a peaceful transformation that she's sort of developing. It's to foster trade between these countries. And it won't, the dollar will play no part in that trade. So it's a very interesting period in history. But because of it, because we're making this massive transition, it's going to be a very difficult period for countries that are sort of left out, and, in particular the United States.
So, Ian, let's talk about what that means for our listeners that are out there trying to, in this environment, certainly preserve assets and survive. If we see this massive inflation, then in nominal terms, we could potentially see stocks continue to go up, and I guess that's a question. But in real terms, certainly, just about all asset classes are going to fall, just like in every other winter season. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'm not sure that the stocks will go up. I think that, I have a theory that the upheaval could be so traumatic that, stock markets may not even function, because, the dollar could be worthless. And, until a new system is brought put into place, and, almost certainly that system has to have some gold backing, because if the Silk Road countries, China and Russia and so on, have some sort of gold backing behind their currencies, we've all got to basically follow suit. And otherwise, no one's going to trust your currency. So I'm not sure that, don't forget they closed the New York Stock Exchange was closed for 4 months at the outbreak of the First World War. So it's possible that stock markets won't even function during this tremendous period of currency upheaval, with the dollar.
So when you take a look at assets, then obviously we've been talking a lot about gold. We've been talking about precious metals. As you were talking, I was thinking about, Weimar Germany after World War I, when they continued to print, the mark was rendered worthless. And I think from the time it failed till the time the Renton mark was put in place, it was 8 or 9 months of literally sheer hell for people. So there's certainly historical precedents for what you talked about. So what would you advise somebody to do?
Well, I think one has to be, you might say that debt is not a problem in a you know, in a massive inflation, because you know you're paying back with effectively dollars that don't have any value. But I really think that, you know, debt will be a problem, because the whole banking system is going to be, you know, in jeopardy, and you know, loans are going to be called in and this kind of thing. So I think, you know, as much as possible, one should be out of debt. For instance, I don't own a, I sold my home in November last year, and I'm renting a home. It's a nice home, but I'm renting because I don't want to take the risk of home ownership, because when this happens, things could get pretty ugly. I've been saying, I'm pretty sure we're going to go back to gold as a monetary standard, and therefore I think, you know, one should have some gold. I am invested in gold mining stocks, even though, you know, I'm not sure whether the stock exchange will function. And again, we have a precedent, as I said, at the outbreak of the First World War, where it was closed for 4 months. And I think, you know, they've been doing very well, the investments in these gold stocks, because gold is just starting. If you can look at it on a technical basis, we're just starting the next run of a major bull market in the physical metal. And silver will be bought along with gold, but I'm not so much a believer in silver as I am in gold, simply because gold is money. Silver has a much more industrial component attached to it.
Well, Ian, it has certainly been a very enlightening conversation today. I have one more question as we close. We've got about a minute and a half left. Jim Rickards has been on the program, and he says that for a lot of the same reasons that you've outlined, that when this reset occurs, that we'll have to go back to a gold standard. He says that when you recalibrate gold, as they did after World War II, and moved it from $20 to $35 an ounce, that now it moves to $10,000 an ounce. Would you agree with that?
What's it going to be priced in worthless dollars? You know, we've talked about that, the massive inflation. It's more as I see it, what's it going to be priced in yuan and possibly rubles? What's going to be the price? Or the Silk Road currency, what is that going to be the price of gold? Because that's really what we'll be paying. So in dollars, it could be significantly higher than that, than $10,000. But in yuan, maybe in the equivalent of today's relationship, yuan to dollars, it will be $10,000 in yuan. But, in dollars, I don't know. It could be much, much higher than that.
We're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today is the very gracious Ian Gordon. And, Ian, always a pleasure to chat with you. And as things evolve, we certainly want to have you back on the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's Everything Financial Radio podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Joining me on next week's podcast will be Mr. Carl Denninger. We'll be talking about exploding healthcare costs, how no one in politics is addressing the real problem, and what ultimately this might mean for you and your portfolio. You won't want to miss it. Carl's got some eye-opening data that everybody ought to be aware of, but it's simply not being talked about. So mark your calendar. Be sure to tune in again next week. That's all for now. Bye.